Glen Oliver, Reel 1.
And what I'd like to do initially is talk about your experiences in Suez and the Canal Zone. I know that you're a Second World War veteran, and we'll come back to that if there's time. So let's just start off with your full name.
Leonard Victor Oliver.
And your date of birth?
4/11/1925.
And it's the 1st of October today, isn't it? 1st of October, 1998.
Rabbit, three times.
I tried to remember, so we'll start off with joining up. You'd got Second World War service as a conscript, but when you joined the Lancashire Fusiliers, you were a regular. Is that right?
A regular, yeah. It was roughly about the 6th of June. I can't give you the exact date. 1948.
Right, yeah. And you joined as a regular as a result of
5 and 7. I joined 5 years and 7 with the colours.
Yeah.
But when I became a sergeant in Kenya, I changed it to 7 and 5. Are you with me?
Yeah.
You know, I'd done that 2 years,
aren't
I? Yeah. But when I first joined, it was 5 and 7, which was the thing then.
Yeah. So you were a fairly well trained soldier with your Second World War experience. Did they make you an NCO when you joined, or did you have to?
No. I was just a pure infantryman when I left in 1947, actually late 1947. But when I joined the Lancashire Fusiliers, I went into support company, which was a specialist company, as a machine gunner, Vickers, medium machine gunner. And WASP operator, which was the old flamethrower on a carrier, bring gun carrier.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
That's what I went in. I went into in support company.
Yeah. When did you hear you were going out to Suez?
We heard we was going out to Egypt on the January, February 1950. At that time, the battalion was demonstration battalion at the School of Infantry, Warminster. But I was on a section at Netherhaven for the Vickers medium machine gun platoon and WASP operator.
Right. Did you get any special training for Suez?
No, none at all.
So you weren't given any lectures on counterinsurgency or...?
No, because when you went there, it was like a peacetime place. It was lovely. Hope to go there. And I hoped to see the Egyptian Museum, which everybody... But we never got to see anything.
Right. So at that stage, there was no talk of Egyptian nationalism or any problems out there?
No.
Right. And where did you fit within the order of battle? Did you join a brigade or a division?
It was a brigade. I believe it was brigade strength in the Suez at that time. It was part of the 1st Infantry Division. They were sort of split up all over the Middle East. Mm. The 1st Division HQ was in Tripoli, in Libya, but it was brigade strength. It was, when we moved there, we were stationed in Fayed, in the Canal Zone. I think it was the Lincolns were down at Suez, and I believe it was the Sussex who were up in it was that sort of thing. Yeah. It was a brigade.
And were you part? Was it 39 Brigade? Can you remember?
I think it was the last. What's that number? I think it was the third. I think it was the third.
Yeah. I've been trying to find an order of battle. I can't find an order of battle.
I can get that
order of battle.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be helpful if you can. Yeah.
I think it's. I'll put it. Say like the 3rd or 13th, or something like that.
Yeah,
but I can find that out through people.
Yeah. So, did you have a specific task in Suez, or were you just garrisoning the
canal zone? We were just garrison, and we used to go on our various desert schemes, you know, training, which was quite numerous. Believe me, we used to go in the desert for about 7 or 8 days at a time, maybe longer. Mm. Whilst we were there, as I say, we went there in April 1950. Whilst we were there, Korea broke out June 1950, and we were actually alerted for Korea, and some of our transport was taken for Korea because of, and that was the situation. at that particular time.
Right. Did you have any contact or relations with the Egyptian army?
No, no.
You didn't ever see them?
No, no. We didn't see much. And we knew they used to do train and whatever in the Sinai Desert. But what area, I really couldn't have just the Sinai Desert.
And you had no specific instructions about how to deal with them or how to...
No.
Right. The next thing is contact or relations with the civilian population.
What can I say? When we was in Fayed, about all you saw of the Egyptians was the ones that worked in the camp, like the contract, the barbers, the tuck shop, you know, the canteen sort of thing, not when they had a canteen, and a little bit of a... shop where you go and they sell a wristwatch and that was in the camp itself. Outside in Fayed, which it weren't much, it was just like a, what can you say, one horse, just a row of shops, that's all you could say, open fronted shops, curry shops, goodness knows what, and that was about it, and selling watermelons and going as well. Not really a lot of contact. Most of the ones you saw, like in the camp, as I said, were in the shops, and I used to do all the dirty jobs, you know, empty all the latrines, etc., and do all the scrub out all the kitchens and God knows what, you know.
And what about civil authorities such as the police? I mean, I know later on that you had quite a set to with the Egyptian police, but when you first arrived, was there any contact with the Egyptian police?
No, not as far as I know, because as far as I could see, we were our own thing in that 90-odd miles, which it was, 90-odd miles, the old Suez. Yeah. We were our own thing. Obviously, we worked with the Egyptians, so we didn't go over the top or anything. There was never any sort of clash or hiccup. I think they just went on because about the only time you saw an Egyptian policeman or anything was when you went into the town of Ismailia or Ismaili, whatever you want to call it. You saw them there directing traffic. It was mainly the civilians who worked for the Suez Canal Company. They had a lot of contact to do with him, which I would do, but other than that, no.
No. What about incidents with the Egyptians? When were there any occasions when there were sort of thefts from the camp? I've read that they were trying to steal weapons and ammunition.
Actually, this sort of thing was nearly commonplace. Mm. What they used to call them, Clifty Wallets. Mm. This seemed to be there. Well. Lifestyle, so to speak, to pinch. They were small incidents. I can just give you one incident. When we was in Moab, when we came back from Aqaba in 51, early 51, we was in the Moasra, which wasn't a bad place to be in. We was in like the bungalow, we weren't in tents, we was all like a bungalow sort of thing, windows etc, doors, which was a change. And this old corporal we had, Corporal McGrath, he was a real old soldier type, India, Burma, the lot. He weren't going to get caught out by the Clifty Wallace. Anyway, he used to like his drink. He comes back one night from a nap, he falls asleep on his bed, about 1 o'clock in the morning. When he wakes up in the morning, he hasn't got nothing. He hasn't got no sheets and nothing. They've whipped all the sheets from under him, over him. All they left him with was a pair of soldier pants and his PT shoes. They'd taken everything. A billers, the lot. And that's at the Clifty Wallace. They were real professional at that. There's no doubt about it.
So what was the general attitude to the Egyptians among the soldiers in the canal zone?
Toleration.
Yeah.
Didn't really care a lot for them. They were, you know, there was that sort of thing. When we was in Aqaba, which we went, which everybody had to do, preferred Akamar in the Jordan, those Arabs there, than we did the ones in Egypt. The ones down in the Jordan were really good fellas.
You transferred from Egypt to Jordan, and then back again.
The setup was then, each battalion had to do 6 months in the Jordan in Akabar. Now Akabar is situated between Israel and Saudi Arabia, and you were just there to sort of keep an eye on those parties, the Jordanians, and that was the scene. This was commonplace.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, now I have seen on the television and in the Soldier magazine that King Hussein, we come to this again, has said that we can wear a commemorative medal for those who served in the Jordan from 1948 to 1958. A commemorative medal has been issued. There you go. That was the scene.
Yeah.
We got on quite well with the old Arabs there, actually. It was really quite a primitive place. It was Akamar, it was Tentage, the same as up in the kind of park. The food and that, and your supplies were brought in by plane from Egypt. We had one airstrip once a week. You weren't allowed in the Gulf of Akabar, no ships. A frigate used to call in once a week to say that they were there. But that was the same. But we got on quite well. In Egypt, no. Toleration. There were some nice Arabs, or Egyptians rather, among them. But mainly, they didn't really like us. And I suppose we didn't really like them.
No. Were you aware of the growth of Arab nationalism at that time? You know, not just in Egypt. I mean, you've mentioned Jordan, but elsewhere, such as Jordan and Persia, Iran.
It nearly comes back to what I said in the first place. There seemed to be that little bit of hostility that seemed to be underlined. Can you understand what I mean? I don't say that they spit at you or anything like that, but they didn't really care for you. They said that you were not there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from about 1946, they've been killing British soldiers in the canals. Right. What do you think was generally the attitude to the civilian workers on the British garrison? I mean, they weren't just Arabs, were they? They weren't just Egyptians. I think there were Indians and people from all over the place.
I think there was quite a good attitude, because there was Mauritians there. Mauritian soldiers, I think they were Barnacle. They were quite good. They were quite good fellas. They were pretty good. Some of the Arabs who worked in the camps, they were fairly decent. Well, they were very poor. They weren't too bad, but by and large, as regards to the Egyptians, no, I weren't in love with them. But the Mauritians and all that. And the Fijians, so I think we had some Fijians later. They were quite good. They were very, very good. I've nothing against them at all. They were very, very good.
So in October 51, the Egyptians abrogated the 1936 treaty, which meant, as far as they were concerned, British forces should no longer be on the canal zone. And they started intimidating the civilian workers. Were you aware that they were being intimidated by Egyptian nationalists, or did you notice a change?
Well, to me, this change was so sudden it was unbelievable. At that time, when it broke out, we was in Moasca, which is just outside of Ismailia. This particular morning, we were doing. That's right. We were just on parade, and all of a sudden, up comes a jeep flying up. Out jumps an officer. I think he's a provost marshal, or the RMP. He And he ran into our adjutant's office, which we could see from where we were. And the next thing we knew was that the men of A Company, who were due to go on the range that morning for their annual shoot, they were dispatched right away down to Ismailia. Now, we did learn from there that what happened was that during the night, thousands of students and God knows what had come down from Cairo and whatever, on rail and God knows what, and gone into Ismailia, stirring up the civilians there, and they had surrounded the married family's shop, and there was 200 odd people in there, our people, army people, women, children, whatever, and they were surrounded, and they were stacking up all the chairs and furniture outside, and they were going to set light to it. And it was our chaps, they went down with a banner telling them to back off or they would fire. They didn't back off, so they fired into the ground, and the bullets ricocheted. And that's when they all fled into the Arab quarter, the native quarter of Ismailia. And then our chaps just ran out the barbed wire and kept them in that compound. Mm. And that's when we got out all the roadblocks and that on the Ismailia Cairo Road, and start checking all the trains coming in, and searching people, which was a task. Curfew from 6 in the morning, from 6 at night till 6 in the morning. Mm.
So this was a definite sudden change.
Oh,
yeah,
yes,
it wasn't a slow build up.
It was murder, yeah.
Yeah.
That was, of all things, it was A Company, really. They were due on the range, but they just happened to be right. They got all the ammunition aboard, the three-ton trucks, and all they had to do was pick up the barbed wire and just go down into Ismailia itself, where they confronted them. Mm.
So support company weren't involved in that? You
no,
weren't
not
actually involved?
No, later till the evening.
Yeah. What instructions were you given?
Well, right away we were stood too.
Yeah.
It was... We just waited, and they said, okay, we could do the various roadblocks, which we did, named by the support company and whatever, and some went down into Ismailia, you know, we were literally split up.
Yeah, yeah. And what were you searching for when you were searching the
arms?
Yeah.
And from the chaps that we got to know, as they went advanced through the native quarter, these days go back, as soon as they shot one, there was a pair of hands come out and yanked them back in the building. Never saw a dead body, then we yanked back because they thought they were going to get mutilated, you see. Because the Arabs are very fond of mutilation, as you know.
Mm. Yeah. So did you yourself witness any attempts of or any examples of intimidation of the workers on the garrison?
Once this broke out, they were gone. You see them, they just fled because they were given orders. They got to get out the canal zone. Otherwise, they'd have got done.
So again, that was a fairly sudden thing. They just all went.
They all went, and obviously they all went. This is understood. Yeah. And we were left, more or less, to... I can't say spend for ourselves, you could say.
But your workload would have changed.
We done all the fatigues, what they done, dug all the latrines, done all the spraying of tents, done all the unloading of ships or whatever. This is where the Mauritians come in. They were very good unloading the ships and that at port said. We had to unload all the supplies when they come down from the various ships going into the ordnance depots because you had to load and that.
Mm.
As regards to haircuts, etc., which we had to do ourselves, between ourselves, where we used to have... You'll hear the term Dobie Wallace.
Mm.
We used to do all our Dobie for us. We had to do it all ourselves. It was a complete change. And this sort of thing with guards, patrols along the Sweetwater Canal, and then This went on, as I say, for over until we moved down to Kenya for the Mau trouble, which was in October 1952. That was our routine. We was on guard and duties all the time.
Did they bring in other units to your area?
Well, as coming back, I said at the beginning, we was like brigade strength with ancillary troops and God knows what. Within 24 hours, they fetched up the airborne. I believe they were in Cyprus. They fetched in the airborne, and then they gradually beefed it up till there was near enough a division of troops in there, I should say, within 3 months, I should say. Had it like that. They fetched troops from Tripoli and Benghazi, fetched up some from, I think there was two or three units came out from Colchester, I think, in England. Yeah, they were pretty well beefed up. Mm. And after the situation in 52, when we had the police stations battles, this is when there was another division of troops were in the canal zone. There's two divisions of troops in the end, which was the 3rd Infantry Division. Two divisions, near enough 80,000 men, plus air support.
During the period, sort of October 51 to January 52, were you ever threatened or attacked by Egyptian nationalists when you were on patrol or...?
We used to have this patrol go out near enough every night. It would be a 1500 weight truck with an armoured car at the front and an armoured car at the rear. And you go along the so many miles along the Sweetwater Canal and you call in at an RAF station. I can't think of its name right now. Was fired on going down there. One particular night, and we all bailed out. We sort of all jumped out of the truck, took up positions, and fired back. We don't know if we hit anybody or not.
Were you armed with a rifle? You had a personal weapon apart from the medium machine gun.
The armored car there. Another night that we called in to this. We called in at this RAF camp. There was a chap in a sentry box outside. He said, and he got his light full on. It's a night time. He said, "Well, you better put that light out, mate. You're lovely silhouetted, you know. Oh, I'll be all right here. Oh, yeah, all right." So anyway, we went into the RAF camp, and they used to give you a cup of tea. You exchange pleasantries, you know, the day. When we came out with our vehicles again, set off down the road. And we say, "You better put your light out, mate. You're lovely silhouetted. Somebody will get you." "Oh, nothing happened to me." We get no more than about 50 yards down the road. Bang! They hit him. Yeah, didn't learn. There was, I would say, thought he was nicely comfortable in his nice little sentry box. You know, the one they saw in Buckland Bower, or used to be. Yeah.
And did you lose anyone from your unit in any of the attacks before the battle?
The main one? No, we were very, very fortunate, actually. There was there were so many incidents that we were in various patrols and that slight that, but didn't lose anybody, funny enough. And one guy, Owen, on, there was shots were fired, but they didn't hit anybody. The bullets got down right away, you know. You know what I mean? And you always kept a tight hold on your weapons anyway. You had to have the sling loop around your wrist. So, because this is what they were after, weapons as well. But no, we didn't lose a weapon at all. No, it was quite good. We got really mustered on these guards and whatever, and patrols.
Yeah. I mean, you were a very experienced infantry regiment with...
Yeah,
quite a few Second World War veterans, I suppose.
Yes,
so,
at that particular time. Yeah. And you didn't fire unless you had to. There was just one other incident where I think it was an artillery unit. They were opposite us in Mowatska, across the road from us. Anyway, they got attacked somewhat by the terrorists one night, and they opened up with everything they got. They opened up for an hour, and there was hell to pay about this, because they never found any corpses, and they fired 20,000 rounds of ammunition, and it wasn't nothing. That didn't scare off nobody, so we had a laugh about that. No, by and large, though, most of the chaps were pretty well experienced. They were pretty well experienced. They got used to it, you know.
Yeah. Well, before we talk about the attack on the police station, I think I'm going to change the reel, because we're coming quite close to the end of that one. Yeah. So,